This is the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show on a Monday morning, the 29th day of the month. And it's actually Mark sitting here in the chair. It's amazing. Dan Buck just down the desk from me here. We got Ethan Bright and Sue Thomas in here with your traffic. So happy to be back. And,
man, it's good to have you back too, man. 10-day trip.
It was a long trip.
You know, I'm a guy who, doesn't matter whether I'm on a cruise, whether I'm on a beach, whether I'm in the mountains, I always get to about that sixth day and I'm so ready to be home. I'm just like, I've seen it, done it. Now, you were traveling to multiple destinations, which makes it a little bit better.
Yes.
And you do that on a cruise too, but I just get so stir crazy and I'm ready to be home, sleep in my own bed. I don't like long vacations. Every time I've done them, I'm like done by about the seventh day.
Went to Italy last year and it was about 10 days and it didn't seem long enough. Oddly enough, there was so much to see, and I felt that way largely this time. Maybe by the seventh or eighth day, but we did have a fantastic trip through Prague and Vienna and down to Budapest by bus, and we stopped at these tiny little villages that, you know, you're seeing something that was built in the 12th century that's still standing. It's just amazing.
And is the scenery, is it fall there like it is here?
No, where there's very colors? Similar temperatures.
Yeah.
We were in the 80s for the first part of the week, and then it got a little colder, but they're right at the end of tourist season over there. Usually the end of September, 1st of October, it's just about the end.
But leaves turning and color?
Just barely.
Oh, okay. Because ours are really starting to get into full color. It's pretty cool to see.
I think it won't be long here before they were, too. We just missed it, clearly. Coming up, we're going to get to Greg Jarrett, of legal political analyst for Fox, who's written a bunch of books about... of course, the Trump years and the political persecution of Donald Trump by the Democrats, who are now whining that it's not fair that James Comey's been indicted. So we're going to see what Greg's analysis is of all of that for you coming up.
And his take on the auto pen and the legality of whether the auto pen pardons that Biden did, whether they'll hold up in court.
And what it would take to get to that decision.
Right.
Supreme Court? I mean, I don't know how far that would have to go to decide that a sitting president's pardons were ineligible.
Especially if he was not mentally aware or even informed of the pardons prior. He was out of the country when many of those pardons were given.
That may be what it comes down to.
Right.
And then you subpoena people under oath, and you find out who's going to tell the truth under risk of going to federal prison. But we'll get to all that for you coming up. You know, one thing that we haven't talked a lot about this morning so far is this horrible shooting up in Michigan. It sounds like the fire may have killed a bunch of people. That we don't know a lot about the suspect here. I'm waiting for the governor of Michigan to come out and blame guns. But the guy was clearly mentally ill, as is the case in most of these situations, rammed his truck into this Latter-day Saints church, then got out with a gun and started shooting people that were running toward the church, set the church on fire, blocked the entrance basically with his truck, and then started shooting people who were trying to flee the scene or run to help because they thought there'd been a car accident. Well, I'm sure more details will come out on it today.
Yeah, and a fifth person reportedly died of their injuries. So
okay.
It's now up to five.
Yeah, that's just a shame. All right, let's get to our top stories, Ethan, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I trust the justice system. There will be a process. He will have his day in court. And if he is innocent of the charges, then I'm sure that they'll be thrown out.
Yeah, that's John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, who was speaking yesterday. I know he spoke to Maria Bartiromo and a few other people, but he was saying that Comey will have his day in court. We think the evidence is strong. We'll see what happens.
It's fine to have partisan debates and squabbles, but you don't hold the people hostage for their services to allow yourself political cover. And that's what Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are doing right now.
Yeah, we couldn't agree more. Mike Johnson talking about this pending government shutdown. You know, we're going to get a live report from Ryan Schmelz up in D.C. coming up in the next hour just to find out where things stand. There's a meeting today between the president and Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. We'll see what happens.
Closest election for for president of the United States in the 21st century.
Wow, I know that's real.
What? What'd she just say?
I don't know what she's been drinking, but she now wants you to believe that her 75 electoral vote loss to Donald Trump was the closest election in the 21st century.
Unbelievable.
Is it the vodka? I don't know what it is, but there is more word salad from one Kamala Harris.
We'll have to go beyond the market. We can establish community land trusts to gradually buy up housing on the private market and convert it to community ownership. We can give tenants a right of first refusal to buy out their landlords when buildings go up for sale.
That is the socialist who will probably be the next mayor of New York City.
Just unbelievable that that guy really thinks that socialized housing is the solution to affordability. I mean, does he understand that if you tax people at that rate, because to make that kind of a public investment, that is such taxation, people are going to flee New York.
They have to.
And then who has to pay the burden is the actual working class people that he's claiming that he's going to help.
It is St. Louis is a microcosm of what he's trying to do to New York. Taxes went up. Earnings taxes keep driving people away because new businesses don't want to locate here. People flee to the county. So what's the solution? Oh, we need to merge the county and the city so we can chase all those wallets that decided to leave the city. They took all of our money. We need to get them back, which is the whole purpose behind the merger. In New York City, there's nowhere for them to go, right? Because New York State is crazy, too.
Go to Jersey, where it's even more. What, New Jersey? Cost of living is even higher.
Crazy, too.
Yeah.
People are going to flee that area. And then when all of the high-wage workers aren't there anymore, who are they going to tax?
Yeah. The corporations will be gone. That's it. He keeps saying the corporate tax is going to pay for this. What are you talking about? You think those corporations are going to hang out while they see 10 to 20% increases to their income tax?
Oh, imagine what it's going to cost to eat at a restaurant anywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
Even the hot dog stands will be taxed.
What sales tax? Crazy. I mean, he'll invent taxes.
Listen to the full bite here from Zohran Mamdani, just so you can understand the extent to which this guy's mind is completely warped. Go to cut 17, please.
We'll have to go beyond the market. We can establish community land trusts to gradually buy up housing on the private market and convert it to community ownership. We can give tenants a right of first refusal to buy out their landlords when buildings go up for sale. And we can fully commit to a new era of social housing, ending subsidies for luxury housing development and using our wealth to build beautiful, high-quality social housing projects that offer good homes and strong communities to everyone. We won't decommodify housing overnight, but we know what we have to do, and we have history to guide us.
Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of was the late 90s, the Fair Housing Act that was implemented by Bill Clinton.
Yep.
When his idea was, I'll just give out vouchers to poor people and we'll just make them market rate instead of the low rate. And that way they'll be able to afford to go to the counties and to the outlying areas with their vouchers. And that's how we'll break up poverty. What he didn't take into consideration, and this is just typical socialist, that when you give more in a public subsidy, it hurts the private market. It's going to drive the prices of the private market, which does what? It puts more people in jeopardy.
Yes.
So instead of having a $650 rent in St. Louis County, well, if you make the voucher $900, is that landlord still going to charge $650? No, he's going to raise it to $900.
Thank you.
Because
yeah.
He said, well, if you don't want to pay me $900, I can go get a voucher person to pay this. Because the vouchers used to pay for slumlords, basically, you know, $400, $500. And it was a motivation to get out of those situations, become independent, and get, you know, be able to pay your own rent in a nicer place. And I know this from experience because I worked at St. Patrick Center in 2001, and we were seeing the effect of this horrific piece of legislation putting thousands of people at risk of becoming homeless or not being able to afford their rent because these vouchers went through the roof.
It's crazy.
And that's what he's talking about. He's talking about socializing all housing in New York City.
Or at least a lot of it.
A lot of it. Well, take away subsidies for building high-rises. Yeah. For wealthy people, guess what? You don't get wealthy people you can tax because they won't come.
They're not going to live there.
It's
true.
It's unbelievable.
You know what? Greg Jarrett wrote a book called Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history. That was about the Russia hoax. And then, of course, he wrote more books about how Donald Trump was, of course, persecuted by Democrats after the Russian hoax. Even after that big one, they just kept at it. We're going to get him live on the air when we come back.
There are many things that he could have been indicted for, but the statute of limitations ran out on so many of those matters. Not here. Perjury is important. You can't, especially if you're a high official, appointed or elected official, you cannot raise your hand, take an oath, and lie to Congress. And that's an important principle, a principle, Jake, for us to advance.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but you didn't answer the part about President Trump putting it all out there for everyone to see.
Yeah, you didn't answer the question. Blah, blah, blah. That's a CNN for you, right? Over there talking about this with Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. We are efforting getting a hold of Greg Jarrett this morning. I don't think we've had any luck yet for some reason. Sometimes previous interviews carry over. So
he was just on Fox about 15 minutes ago.
Well, yeah, so I'm sure he's. We'll get him on the air right here in just a minute. But you know, he wrote a book about the Russia collusion, Russiagate, called Witch Hunt. He wrote one called The Russia Hoax, and then he followed it up with one called Witch Hunt. And who was at the center of all of that? James Comey is on the cover of his book. So I can't wait to get his thoughts on exactly how this went down with James Comey and the fact that, you know, unfortunately, as you heard Mike Johnson say there, if it wasn't for the statute of limitations, there could be potentially be a lot more that James Comey could be charged with. And I don't know when that statute ran out on some of those other charges. Maybe it was before Donald Trump got reelected, or before he could get people in place in the DOJ to pursue this, because the Biden people weren't going to pursue it. He was doing their bidding.
Well, and every time he testified and lied, or so supposedly lied in front of Congress on those things, that clock restarted. So even though it was about Russian collusion issues, it was about laptop issues, it was about some of the investigations into Donald Trump that were clearly illegal and being pushed, those things ran out. So all they can get him on now is the actual lying to Congress and the deceiving the congressional stuff. So there, even if they get him, it's on much lesser charges than what the actual real big crimes were, because those statutes have run out.
Oh, sure.
They can only get him because of his testimony well after the fact.
Well, I mean, again, if you're convicted of perjury, that's a serious crime. And my guess is he's relegated to long walks on the beach these days anyway. I don't know who would employ him. But if he's got that on his record as well, that's fitting. There was some sense of justice there if that happens, in my opinion.
And then you've still got the question of, are any of the charges, and that was one reason why I was looking forward to having him on, was, is there any way to go back and get Obama and get Clinton in 2016 for the clear lies that were told on the Russia collusion? Obviously, you know, calling Donald Trump a Russian asset, coming up with 61 intelligence agents, calling the laptop from hell, Russian disinformation. I mean, those were all felonies to the American people of lying about something they clearly knew. The dossier. I mean, go right down the list of everything.
Right down the list.
Yeah, of things we could have convicted them on, but now the statute of limitations on many of those things I think have run out.
How about Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice on Benghazi? I don't know. Oh. I mean, that was clear perjury.
And still no justice.
And they knew darn good and well what happened there and what caused it. And if you saw 13 hours, their lack of sending support in. Looks like we do have Greg Jarrett on the phone this morning from Fox News. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Thanks very much.
I was just noticing the cover of your book, The Russia Hoax, has a guy named James Comey pictured on there. How are you feeling about this?
You know, I opened the book talking about how vainglorious and arrogant he is. And of course, you know, he didn't disappoint. On Thursday, you know, moments after the indictment, he rushed to the nearest camera to vow that he was going to fight for, you know, truth, justice in the American way. The only thing missing was his Superman cape. You know, he is nauseously self-righteous and self-absorbed. But that aside, you know, we'll see whether or not prosecutors have marshaled together sufficient evidence to bring a credible case. I think much of it's simply going to depend on the quality of the witnesses who are top former FBI officials, longtime loyalists to James Comey. Have they turned against him, or will they sort of hedge and fudge their testimony in his favor? It's too early to know.
Yeah, and Andrew McCabe testified, did he not, that he did leak information? It's hard for me to believe that James Comey didn't sign off on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. The way that Comey can kind of weasel his way out is, well, I didn't authorize it in advance. I only acquiesced after I was told after the fact. You know, that's one way that, you know, he can get around, you know, the willful, intentional nature under the false statement and obstruction statutes.
You know, a lot of people asking if the pardons against other people in both the Biden administration, Obama administration, the mass amount of pardons that were auto-pen generated, will those hold up legally if indeed it's found that the president either A, didn't order it or authorize those auto-pen uses, or B, was not mentally, you know, astute enough to make those pardons? Where do you think the auto-pen argument's going to land?
Well, I think it requires more investigation, more testimony, but from what we know, it would appear that Biden didn't specifically authorize a great many of those pardons, which, you know, under the law, you cannot delegate that power to somebody else. And, you know, under the law, he has to knowingly understand and grant the pardons. If he was incapable mentally of knowing, renders them null and void, invalid.
Wow. So now we have the testimony of the former prosecutor who said that he was a tired old man with a bad memory. So it couldn't be Joe Biden's defense, correct? I mean, Joe Biden saying, I did authorize it, would not be good enough if you've got people in the administration willing to testify that they know he was unaware of that.
Yeah, and in particular, there's one former White House aide who was actually operating the auto pen, who said, you know, I almost never saw Biden. I received no specific instructions from him, that it was delegated through one of his, you know, top inner circle members. And so it invites the question, did Biden even know about it? Wow. Or was the auto pen being operated without his consent? Under the law, it comes down to consent. So did he know about it? A. B, was he capable mentally of granting consent? You know, these are questions that need further investigation, the answers to which we simply don't know.
It's a great point.
They're saying there's a lot more indictments in the works. Do you have a sense of whom? Is it McCabe? Is it going to be, you know, the Bidens? Is it Fauci? I mean, where do you think some of these next indictments are going to go after?
Well, we do know that the former CIA director, John Brennan, is under criminal investigation by the Department of Justice. So I think they're weighing whether to bring charges against him. There are also questions about the statute of limitations, whether that's expired. The indictment against Comey was rendered just days before tomorrow's expiration of the statute of limitations. So there are a lot of considerations here. But I think also the Department of Justice is looking at a ongoing conspiracy surrounding lawfare, which extends the statute of limitations. So, you know, at this point in time, we're just sort of looking into a crystal ball, and we really have no idea what the DOJ is doing.
Greg Jarrett, a Fox News host, and, of course, senior legal reporter for him. We appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care. We'll talk again soon. And we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a minute. Tom Ackerman coming up in the next hour. Stay tuned.
Government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore, chapped nipples.
All right. Time for a little soapbox here on the state of American airports. Can I just tell you that, Dan? We'll talk about Lambert Airport for just a minute. There's all this talk about fixing the airport up,
yep.
Right? And of course, I had to fly in and out of there in the past week when I was on vacation. And I had to fly into Detroit. Now, I think of Detroit as a complete crap hole. Ryan Recker, I'm sorry. I know Ryan lives there now. But that's my image of Detroit, Michigan is a crap hole. It is. Detroit, Dearborn, the whole bunch of, I don't have a good image of it. And I've been there.
Bad vibes.
Yeah. I've been there many years ago. And it's just, I have bad vibes from Detroit. Their airport is surprisingly clean and updated, right?
Okay.
But I got to tell you, I've flown through many major airports in Florida and in Georgia and Atlanta, Newark, O'Hare, obviously Denver and Minneapolis. I mean, I've flown through a majority of American airports. None of them can hold a candle to the airports in Europe, and I don't know why that is.
What is it about the European airports? They're cleaner.
They're cleaner. They're more modern and updated. Like, for example, so we had an early call Saturday. We had to get up at 2:30 Budapest time to catch a 3:30 bus to get to the airport for a 6 a.m. flight. So we were exhausted, to say the least. By the time we finally got to Amsterdam, which was a 2-hour flight to Amsterdam, we get into the Amsterdam airport, and I kind of wish I had more time there, right? But what I noticed was that all of the chairs don't have arms.
Yeah.
If you go to Lambert and you're freaking exhausted from, you got a big layover because you're trying to get to somewhere else because you can't fly anywhere directly out of Lambert anymore, it seems like, and you just want to stretch out and lay down for a minute, you can't. There's not a chair in Lambert Airport that I know of that doesn't have arms,
dude,
which is maddening to me.
That's every airport in America. Honest to goodness, they do not have any.
They do
bench
not
seating.
Want you to be able to lay down and take up more than one chair. Even it doesn't matter how tired you are. There, nothing like that.
Or if
right?
you're in an empty gate. I got laid over one time in Baltimore. I couldn't find one anywhere in the airport to where I could.
So
lay
you
got to
lay down on the hard floor, which
literally
is nasty.
I had 7 hours overnight. 11 o'clock, I was supposed to board a plane, and my connecting flight was like 20 minutes late. They locked the gate on me. I couldn't get in. I had to stay till a 5 a.m. flight out. So for 7 hours, I looked for a place to freaking lay down and could not. Everything had a chair. And that's Baltimore. That's Atlanta. That's Chicago. They do not want you to lay down in an American airport.
At the Budapest airport, they had lounge chairs.
Recliners?
Like lounge chairs, like they weren't really recliners, but they were just sort of, they had the long thing for your legs, and then they just sort of, you could recline. There were people sacked out on these things, right? Because they had gotten there early and they're waiting for their flight. I've never seen anything like that in America. Now, obviously, I haven't been to every single airport. There may be examples out there where a couple of people have caught up. But if we're going to rehab Lambert Airport, we're going to spend millions of dollars doing this or that. There's more to it than just changing the World War II look of it, right? Do something on the inside.
Right.
Make the inside livable. And because sometimes people have to be there for 5 or 6 hours. Give them some place to relax instead of having to pay exorbitant airport prices to rent one of those sleeping pods. I saw that at one airport, I think it was Detroit maybe, where you could pay to crawl in there for an hour and snooze.
And I'd pay happily. Just make them available. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They didn't do anything like that at Lambert.
No, no.
And then, of course, you know, you go into the I'm going to gripe about this again. You go in to get a beer and an appetizer while you're waiting for your flight,
and it's $42 for a beer and some fried shrimp. It was $42.
Yeah.
Wow. My wife had a soda. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's the state of American airports.
Stadium pricing at the airport, no question.
Yeah.
It's the same people. It's Aramark. It's one of the big food providers. And that's just what they do. It doesn't matter where you're at.
Yeah. We flew through Frankfurt last year. I've obviously been to the airport in Rome. I've now been to the airport in Prague and in Budapest and in Amsterdam and London. We were in Heathrow last year. All of them are just clean and updated. Not all of them have the arm-free chairs, but some of them are catching on.
Yeah. I mean, and I love your idea of saying, hey, if you don't want to provide it to the everyday cash, at least give me a pod or give me an area that's got like 8 or 10 sleeping rooms for people who do have extended stay overnights and want to catch some shut-eye. Give them a quiet place that they can go, close the door, pay a fee, whatever it is. And you could make some more revenue off a waiting area, too. I mean, revenue is always an issue, right?
Yeah.
But I think people would pay $15-$20 for a sleeping pod for a few hours.
Paris was the exception. We flew into Paris and had a 4 or almost 5 hour layover to get into Prague. And that was not the most updated airport I've ever seen, surprisingly.
At least everybody in France is kind and considerate and sweet to Americans.
And they don't care.
They hate you.
I was, you know, waiting for Bridget Macron to come out and, you know, be serving us or something, but no.
Right.
You could get caviar at the little bar where you paid $18 for a beer or whatever
it cost.
How
much were fish eggs?
$100. 100 euros. I'm sorry. It's 100 euros for caviar.
And the conversion rate right now is what?
It's about a 125, 100.
Oh.
It's about $1.25 to a euro.
So it would be $125.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
For fish eggs.
Yeah. I know.
I'll be darned.
Who
knew?
It's eye-opening to travel the world and see
and
how the people
And that's without crackers. The crackers are another 20.
The crackers, the rich crackers were another 120. I don't know. I didn't know. I wasn't about to order it, but it was just amazing to me.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to get you out of the madness and the craziness and the frustration of those airports and get you back in here.
Well, thank you.
That's great.
Glad to be back.
A
little slap happy because of the time difference. Because to my body, it's like, I mean, I'm wide awake because it would be like 3 in the afternoon, 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon over there.
Yeah, it takes your body like 4 or 5 days. That jet lag's real.
It
no
does.
No question.
It was worse going that way, I think, but a little better coming this way. That's good. All right, coming up, we're going to get back to Dan with the Buck Don't Give a Blank. He's got a great one today. Stay tuned for that. And coming up in the next hour, will the government shut down? I don't know. If it does, will anybody notice? The average person, probably not. But there is going to be a meeting today. We're going to check in with Ryan. He's covering us live from Washington, D.C. And, of course, Tom Ackerman in here at 8:35 with more on Mizzou, maybe his thoughts on the unsportsmanlike conduct at the Ryder Cup this year. All that coming up. Stay tuned.
But don't give a f***.
It's the segment where we give people in social media a mainstream media platform. These are folks that most people in the mainstream do not ever want on their airwaves because, well, they're just out there speaking truth that doesn't fit their narrative, especially in the minority community. When was the last time you ever saw CNN or MSNBC focus on a African-American person talking favorably about Donald Trump? Ever?
Not often.
I can't think of one. So anyway, we have a great Minority Monday superstar. This gal, she only has about 23,000 followers on TikTok. Hopefully after you hear her, you're going to go out there, follow her, click on her. You also can find tons of her posts on X, a lot of people sharing her content. She's funny. She's smart. She's extremely passionate about an American. She's Jamaican-born and came here as a legal immigrant. And folks, she's 100%. A proud American. And she got an email recently or a little text post saying, "How dare you support MAGA as a black woman?" Well, this was her response of why she's so MAGA and wears a MAGA hat in all her videos, by the way. Here she is.
"What kind of a black woman are you to vote for MAGA?" Well, first of all, fix your sentence structure. It's horrible. But since you asked so nicely, I will honor you with a response. I am the kind of black woman who is educated,
She shows her diplomas here on the wall.
I have done several research on American history. I actually love American history. I'm also well-traveled, haven't been to 5 out of the 7 continents. I love the Lord, I love my family, and I love America. I am an immigrant, and I care about what this future holds for my children and my grandchildren who are yet to be born. What I do today will affect them tomorrow. So, what kind of black woman am I to vote for MAGA? The kind that wants to make America great again.
Absolutely.
Boom.
Bang. Like, what's so offensive about MAGA? Right? It's make America great again. Spoken from an immigrant, a person who came here legally with her children and are raising them through the American standards. She is a student, too. When you watch her videos, she is a real student of American history. And she said she got a lot of that excitement towards America's past from her immigration process. In studying for her exam and going through many classes, it just encouraged her to dig deep into our founding fathers. And she has some amazing videos that really address her passion for why she's such a staunch American and a staunch supporter of President Trump. She also does some funny little lip-syncing things to various songs. She's just entertaining. I encourage you to go out there. It is real easy to find her. Just go MAGA 4547. All right, the president 45, president 47. MAGA 4547. You'll find her on TikTok. Even if you search MAGA 4547, she'll pop up on a ton of X feeds as well. If you're not on TikTok, you can find her content on a lot of other people's feeds. Every time she puts something out, it gets many, many shares. She has a lot of video views, but only 23,000 followers so far. I thought she would have a lot more. She's entertaining. Yeah. Anna Palumbo is her name. Again, a Jamaican born.
Are we sure that's her?
I think so. Yeah, Anna. I know Anna is her name. You told me the last name.
This is Anne. I think I might have followed the wrong person when you told me this
Anna,
earlier.
So yeah, Anna is Anna. Her first name. And that's all I've seen on her post. She doesn't give a lot of her personal details. But in her content, you'll love her. 100% true blue MAGA.
Yeah, there are a bunch of people out there who have a similar name that you can follow. So I think that's the catch.
Yeah, but MAGA 4547 is what will pop her. She'll pop up under that mantra.
Okay. So, yep. All right. Well, she's great. And for people that been listening for a long time, we had a lady on named Evelyn, who's a local success story, who immigrated here from Africa 15 years ago. Same attitude toward it.
Yep.
I want America to be great. How could you not want America to be great? It's given me the greatest opportunity of my life.
And she
was
getting
the honor to come here and become a U.S. citizen.
And people criticize her on the website all the time, on TikTok, for saying, "You're an immigrant. How dare you support Donald Trump? He's anti-immigrant." And she says, "No, he's not. He's pro-immigrant.
Yes.
He just says you got to do it legally. You don't walk into our country and we don't know anything about you and expect to stay. You're going to do it the legal process." And she has some funny takes on people who jump the line.
Yeah, she does.
And jump in front of her.
Great, great one, Dan. Thank you. Coming up, we'll talk to Ryan Schmelz about the possibility of the government turning out the lights and shutting the doors. And most of us probably won't even notice, but they are having a meeting today, so we'll check in with Ryan coming up at 8:20, and we got Tom Ackerman in studio at 8:35 to talk about Mizzou and their next big opponent, which is Alabama in 2 weeks. We'll be back in just a minute.